This is Nightline. Tonight, Ghislaine Maxwell. Could the conviction of Jeffrey Epstein's madam be thrown out?
This is an absolute nightmare situation for any prosecutor.
Her lawyers calling for a new trial after a juror's shocking revelation. It's the latest twist in the saga, which also includes Prince Andrew's civil case that has the British royal family on the defensive.
Royal Highness, let us ask, do you support Prince Andrew?
Why the Queen's second son has been banished from public life. Plus, Bob Saget's legacy. His widow, Kelly Rizzo's heartbreak, remembering the love of her life.
He just wanted to spread love and laughter, and he did it so amazingly.
How the comic faced his own tragedies.
And he lost his sisters, he lost his parents.
And what she now wants the world to know about her husband. And Encanto. With the hit song, We Don't Talk About Bruno, the sensation taking over TikTok and overtaking the pop charts. Thanks for joining us. Tonight, convicted sex trafficker Ghislaine Maxwell's fight for freedom is receiving a boost from an unlikely and unwitting source, one of the jurors who found her guilty in her trial. After going public with his own experience of abuse, his actions now bringing the jury's decision into question.
Less than a month after Ghislaine Maxwell was found guilty on charges including sex trafficking of a minor, that verdict now in jeopardy because of one juror. The defense team for the disgraced socialite filing a motion for a new trial on behalf of the one-time girlfriend and associate of deceased sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Her lawyers contending that one of the jurors, identified as juror number 50, failed to disclose his own history of childhood sexual abuse, according to a person with knowledge of the motion.
It is an absolute nightmare situation for a prosecutor in any case, yet alone the Ghislaine Maxwell trial, because in this type of case, you don't want victims to be re-traumatized by giving their story a second time.
After what all I've learned, she's just as guilty as Epstein. I don't want to call her a monster. A predator is the right word.
Earlier this month, juror number 50 came forward, identifying himself by his first and middle names, Scotty David, giving interviews to multiple media outlets, including the Daily Mail, claiming that his reflections about his own story of abuse helped convince some skeptical jurors to believe the women who testified against Maxwell. The Independent reporting that he shared with his fellow jurors, quote, "I know what happened when I was sexually abused. I remember the color of the carpet, the walls. Some of it can be replayed like a video, but I can't remember all the details. There are some things that run together." That disclosure sending shockwaves. At the time, Maxwell's attorney saying those statements present, quote, incontrovertible grounds for a new trial.
The Ghislaine Maxwell team is filing for a new trial based on this new representation from juror 50 that, one, he did not disclose his own personal sexual abuse, but two, use that information to persuade jurors into believing the credibility of some of the alleged victims.
Scotty David reportedly telling the Daily Mail he didn't remember a question about sexual abuse on the jury questionnaire, but saying he would have answered honestly if asked. But tonight, a source familiar with the motion for a retrial saying juror number 50 answered no on that questionnaire when asked if he, a friend, or family member had been the victim of sexual harassment, abuse, or assault.
According to the argument by Maxwell's defense, there are many individuals who checked yes as to previous sexual harassment, abuse, or assault. And it appears that none of them made it to the jury. And the strongest defense argument here is that this should have been one more juror who didn't make it to the panel based on that answer.
The chance of a new trial and potential freedom up in the air for Maxwell, who faces up to 65 years in prison. She's been in jail since her dramatic arrest at a New Hampshire estate in the summer of 2020, almost exactly 1 year after Epstein took his own life in his Manhattan jail cell in 2019 while awaiting trial on charges of sex trafficking. During her trial, prosecutors called 60-year-old Maxwell a serial predator, saying she and Epstein were partners in crime and that she helped facilitate and, on some occasions, participated in the sexual abuse of underage girls from 1994 to 2004. Accusers took the stand, saying Maxwell played a central role in befriending, grooming, and offering them up to be sexually abused by her then-boyfriend, Epstein, when they were teenagers. One of the four survivors who testified against Maxwell, Annie Farmer.
I first met Jeffrey Epstein when I was 16 years old. Even when I think about it now, I kind of get a feeling in my stomach.
Farmer says she met Epstein through her sister Maria, who was initially hired to collect art for the financier. Both she and her sister say Ghislaine Maxwell sexually assaulted them. Annie says it happened to her at his New Mexico ranch.
She said, okay, you know, get undressed and then come lay on the table. And she, you know, touches me around my chest. This was such a scary situation for me. So I just needed to just to manage that and to go on as if everything was normal.
After Maxwell's conviction, Farmer was relieved and hopeful that this would lead to a continued reckoning.
I think justice is a complicated term. We know there were other people involved and other perpetrators, and we certainly hope that there will continue to be investigations so that other people will be held accountable for the ways that they abused people.
Anyone who is tangentially even connected to this case wants the media cycle of Ghislaine Maxwell, Jeffrey Epstein, and all of the accusers to just go away. So especially for Prince Andrew, who's having his own problems with Virginia Giuffre, he wants this case to be done and over with as quickly as possible.
The embattled royal facing a civil lawsuit from Virginia Giuffre, who says she was trafficked to the prince by Maxwell and Epstein, alleging that the prince assaulted her on three separate occasions when she was just 17. Prince Andrew has long denied the allegations, even sitting down on the record with the BBC to defend himself in what was a largely panned interview.
I have no recollection of ever meeting this lady.
The civil suit could proceed to trial as early as this fall after a judge in New York refused to dismiss it at the prince's request.
This was the worst case scenario for Prince Andrew and for the monarchy at this stage in the outcome. The only hope of putting this behind him was getting this dismissed, and that hasn't happened.
The royal family taking drastic actions to distance themselves from the prince. The queen cut all financial ties with her son, stripping him of titles, military honors, and patronages. The prince's social media accounts wiped, and in a statement, the palace made a note of saying Andrew would be defending himself as a private citizen.
The Queen, Prince Charles, Prince William, they're the main players in this, have said enough's enough. There's so much damage being caused by this case and these allegations that the royal family is now being dragged into it. The best thing to do is cut ties, but it's very difficult to cut ties with the man who was born second in line to the throne. It's the Queen's second son.
In the wake of the death of Prince Philip, the situation with Andrew has caused a considerable amount of stress for the 95-year-old Queen.
This is the Queen's Platinum Jubilee year. This is a year when the royal family was intended to be very much in the spotlight for celebratory reasons. And now we have a situation where this is threatening to completely overshadow everything that happens. And whenever the royal family appear, this is going to be part of the narrative.
Other royals have faced awkward moments, like this one yesterday when a reporter asked Prince William for his thoughts on his uncle.
Your Royal Highness, can I just ask, do you support Prince Andrew?
Sorry, I can't hear you.
Do you support Prince Andrew?
And on Friday, Prince Charles avoiding this reporter's question.
Can I ask you a view on your brother's position, Prince Andrew?
The next steps for Prince Andrew remain unclear, including the possibility that the case could be settled out of court.
In terms of the court of law, he may be good with a settlement and a non-admission of guilt or wrongdoing, but I think Prince Andrew is squarely fighting in the court of public opinion.
For Ghislaine Maxwell, the court of public opinion, as well as criminal courts, had seemed clear on her guilt. Now a judge will decide if the verdict will stand.
Up next, Bob Saget's widow coming to terms with her sudden loss, which she wants the world to know about the man she loved.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer.
We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Less than 2 weeks after his death, Bob Saget's widow is on a mission to honor his memory and the things that he cared so very much about. She spoke to ABC's TJ Holmes.
Everything that I've been surrounded by has been a reminder of him and, you know, memory of him. And so it's been very, very sad, but also very beautiful.
Kelly Rizzo is facing a new reality as she mourns the sudden loss of her husband, Bob Saget.
He was just so wonderful. I was just so honored to be his wife and to be able to be a part of it and bring him any bit of happiness that I could, because he deserved it so much.
He was affectionately known as America's Dad.
Super Dad, flying out the door.
Playing Danny Tanner on Full House. But to Rizzo, Saget was simply the love of her life.
I presume you have been asked a lot over the past 10 days the question, how you're doing or how you're holding up.
I was telling people today that today is really almost the first day that, you know, there's only so many tears, like your body will let you cry.
Today is better than yesterday. Yesterday is better than the day before.
Yeah.
Saget passed away last week in his Orlando hotel room at the age of 65.
He was flying home the next day, yeah, after his shows.
What was the last conversation, phone call?
He was just on his way home or back to his hotel and just was telling me what a wonderful show he had and how it was so amazing. And he was happy and just loving what he did. It made him so happy to just bring laughter to people. And,
sorry. And that was his entire message. He just wanted to spread love and laughter, and he did it so amazingly.
Hours before his death, he was on stage at a Jacksonville, Florida concert hall.
Demented as me when I'm not thinking.
Performing his two-hour set. Saget had just kicked off a new nationwide comedy tour, finally reuniting with his fans face-to-face.
He was so happy and fulfilled to be able to bring people together. I mean, all walks of life, you know, red states and blue states. He had fans that were 6 years old and fans that were 96 years old. He was very concerned with the state of the world. He would just always say, you know, with everything going on in the world, with everything going on in the world, this is my calling.
He seemed to be a very healthy dude. Was there any health concern that you know of?
All I'll point to is that last post of his where he just said he felt like he was 26 again and doing what he loved.
But feeling good, he had talked on stage, I believe, about having COVID December or January.
I was not anything.
You had no reason to think that he was in poor health of any kind.
He was great.
He was great.
Their love story began in 2015 on social media when he DM'd the food and travel blogger. After dating 3 years, they married in 2018, with Saget turning the ceremony into a bit of a comedy act.
Please tell me what is going on in that picture. What are you doing?
Oh, gosh. Bob did like a minute of stand-up like during our vows. And he just made me laugh so hard.
Was he always funny?
Comedians are not always funny. Comedians are usually comedians because they've had a lot of pain in their life and a lot of suffering in their life. Bob had a lot of loss in his life and a lot of pain. You know, he lost his sisters, he lost his parents. And that was always there.
But she says his losses made him all that more passionate about helping others.
He had three life's works, his comedy, his girls, and his foundation. And those three things were what kept him going.
For decades, a champion for SRF, the Scleroderma Research Foundation, helping to raise millions and honoring his sister who died of the autoimmune disorder in 1994. His friends are now honoring his work with the foundation. John Mayer and Candace Cameron Bure designed sweatshirts, one saying, "Love like Jesus, hug like Bob Saget," with all proceeds going to the SRF.
People went crazy for it, and so now she's been selling these to benefit Scleroderma Research Foundation, which this one's very special because if you knew Bob, you know he gave the best hugs.
The outpouring of love and support for Saget has been tremendous. From John Stamos saying, "He was a brother to us guys, a father to us girls, and a friend to all of us." And Seinfeld's Jason Alexander tweeting, "The loss of Bob Saget hits deep. If you didn't know him, he was kind and dear and cared about people deeply."
What would you like to share that just we weren't privy to that you would like for us to know about Bob?
He had the biggest heart of anyone I've ever known. He put everybody first. He was just the most absolutely wonderful husband that I ever could have dreamed of. He was the best father to his girls. They adore him, and they're his life. He loved them so much, and I love them so much.
Even at the service, people were coming up to you and they were saying, "Yeah, I just talked to Bob the other day," or "He just messaged me." How in the world did he have time or make time for all of these folks?
It's like he had clones or something. He was in constant touch with everybody he loved. And so if you were in Bob's life, you knew that he loved you. Period.
Those people now showing up for Rizzo, including his Full House TV family.
They've been there every step of the way, and they've just assured me that they'll be there for me. And I know that would make Bob very happy.
I'm so proud to have been able to raise these girls and know them since they were like my girls.
Rizzo and those who knew him best promised to spread the love and passion he radiated on screen and off screen, and forever cherish the larger-than-life man.
What do you see your mission being now?
I just want to share his message of love and laughter that was so important to him, and just to keep reminding everybody how special and how wonderful and how truly, truly good of a person he was.
Our thanks to TJ. And finally tonight, if you haven't heard the hit song from Encanto, you will.
We don't talk about Bruno, no, 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 no.
The hit song, "We Don't Talk About Bruno," from Disney's Encanto, has social media buzzing.
We don't talk about Bruno.
Sparking dance challenges across TikTok. With the hashtag Encanto being used over 9 billion times in videos celebrating culture and representation. The Lin-Manuel Miranda composed track currently sits at number 4 on the Billboard Hot 100, surpassing Frozen's Let It Go. Jamal Sims is the film's choreographer.
As a creator, all you want is to know that you've touched someone in some positive way.
Lin-Manuel Miranda and John Leguizamo will be live on GMA tomorrow to discuss what made this song and movie a major hit. That's Nightline for tonight. You can watch all of our full episodes on Hulu. We'll see you right back here same time tomorrow. Thanks for staying up with us. Good night, America.